A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. The US and Iran have reportedly agreed to a memorandum of understanding, signed it electronically, and the immediate question that jumps out is, nobody's actually seen the text. No public release, no annexes, no details. Which raises two things worth digging into. Is this kind of opacity normal for an MOU? And what objectives does the silence actually serve? Because silence in diplomacy is rarely an accident.
It's almost never an accident. And the first thing to nail down here is what an MOU even is, because most coverage gets this completely wrong. An MOU is not a treaty. It's not legally binding in the way people assume. It's a political commitment, a documented handshake that says, we agree on a framework, we intend to pursue these objectives, but nobody's going to the UN Security Council to enforce it.
It's a promise ring. Not a marriage license.
That's actually not a bad way to put it. And because it's a promise ring, the parties have a lot of flexibility about what they disclose. There's no legal obligation to table it in a parliament or publish it in a federal register. The Iran nuclear deal in 2015, the JCPOA, that was different. That was a detailed agreement with a UN Security Council resolution backing it. An MOU sits in this gray zone where the commitment is real, but the transparency is optional.
Which immediately makes me wonder, if transparency is optional, who's choosing to keep it opaque here, and why? Because the Reuters piece on this mentions that both sides have confirmed the MOU exists, but when pressed for specifics, they've given nothing. Not even the broad strokes of what's covered.
And that's the tension. You've got two governments with entirely different domestic audiences and entirely different political vulnerabilities. The silence serves both of them, but for completely different reasons.
Walk me through the Iranian side first. What does Tehran get out of a secret MOU?
Iran's domestic politics around any agreement with the U.S. are extraordinarily delicate. You've got hardliners in the Majlis, the parliament, who will pounce on anything that looks like a concession. You've got the Revolutionary Guard Corps, which has its own economic and political interests that often run counter to diplomatic engagement. And you've got a public that's been told for decades that America is the Great Satan. You don't pivot from that overnight without some political cover.
Opacity is the cover.
If the text isn't public, nobody in Tehran can quote chapter and verse to attack the foreign ministry. The government can say to hardliners, look, we didn't give away anything on enrichment, we didn't compromise on sanctions relief, we didn't recognize anything, and there's no document to prove otherwise. Meanwhile, they can tell a different story to the business community or the reformist wing. The silence lets them run multiple narratives simultaneously.
The diplomatic equivalent of saying, I'll tell you later, to every faction, and hoping nobody compares notes.
Which is a high-wire act, but it's one they've been practicing for years. You'll remember the IAEA access restrictions since 2021. Same playbook. Keep things vague. Control what different audiences see. Buy time.
On the American side, because the Trump administration doesn't exactly have a reputation for shyness about its diplomatic wins.
This is where it gets interesting. The Trump administration has every incentive to sell this as a victory. The Strait of Hormuz reopening, the ceasefire extension, de-escalation after a very tense period. But if you release the full text, you're also releasing whatever the US agreed to. And that's where the political vulnerability flips.
Because there are people in Washington who will see any agreement with Iran as appeasement.
Not just see it as appeasement. They'll comb through every clause looking for proof. What did we give up? What sanctions were eased? Was there any language that implicitly recognizes Iran's regional position? The same dynamic that constrains Tehran constrains Washington, just with a different flavor. The silence protects both sides from their own hawks.
We've got a mutual interest in opacity. But there's a third audience here that I think is just as important. The other regional players, Saudi Arabia, Israel, the UAE. What does the silence tell them?
It tells them everything and nothing at the same time. If you're sitting in Riyadh or Jerusalem, you're reading the silence as data. You're asking, why won't they release the text? What are they hiding? And the ambiguity itself becomes a signal. It says this agreement might be more far-reaching than either side wants to admit publicly, or it might be so thin that releasing it would embarrass everyone involved.
The ambiguity is a weapon. We're not telling you what we agreed to, so you have to assume the worst, or the best, and plan accordingly.
That's the Strategic Ambiguity Playbook. And it's very old. The U.S. has used it with Taiwan for decades. Israel uses it around its nuclear capabilities. When you refuse to clarify, you force your adversaries and your allies to hedge against multiple possibilities, which can actually be more stabilizing than clarity would be.
Because clarity creates red lines that can be crossed. Ambiguity keeps everyone tiptoeing.
If the MOU text said explicitly, the U.S. will not oppose Iranian influence in southern Iraq, that's a red line Israel might feel compelled to act on. But if it's vague, if nobody knows what was agreed, then Israel has to weigh the possibility that acting could blow up something that's actually in its interest. The fog of diplomacy.
Let me push on something, though. You said an MOU isn't legally binding. But not legally binding doesn't mean not real. What actually changes on the ground if this thing exists?
This is where the electronic signature detail Daniel mentioned is actually worth flagging. The fact that it was signed electronically, not at a summit with handshakes and photo ops.
Which itself is a choice.
It's a huge choice. An electronic signature says this is transactional, not transformational. Nobody flew to Geneva or Vienna. Nobody stood at podiums. This was negotiated through channels, probably Oman or Qatar, and signed with a click. The medium matches the message. We're not friends, we're not allies, we're two parties who found a narrow band of overlapping interests and documented it.
The PDF diplomacy era.
Yet, the Strait of Hormuz is reportedly reopening. That's not nothing. 20% of the world's oil transits through that strait. If the MOU includes commitments on freedom of navigation, that's a concrete, verifiable outcome that affects global energy markets tomorrow.
Even without seeing the text, we can infer some of what's in it from what's happening. The ceasefire extension, the strait reopening, those are observable facts. The MOU is the container for whatever mutual commitments produce those facts.
And that's actually a useful way to think about diplomatic opacity in general. You don't need to see the text to see the effects. If Iranian-backed militias in Iraq suddenly go quiet, if Houthi attacks in the Red Sea taper off, if oil tankers start moving through Hormuz without incident, those are the real clauses of the agreement, whether they're written down or not.
The proof is in the shipping lanes.
And insurance premiums on tanker traffic through Hormuz. Those are a real-time market signal of whether the agreement is holding. If Lloyd's of London drops the war risk premium, that's a more honest indicator than any press release.
Okay, let's get into the mechanics, though. Daniel's core question was, is this normal? And I think the answer is more nuanced than yes or no. Because there's normal for MOUs, and there's normal for U.S.-Iran diplomacy.
MOUs in general are frequently not public. The U.S. signs dozens of them a year, with allies, with partners, with international organizations, and most of them never make the news. They're administrative, technical, narrow in scope. Nobody's waiting with bated breath for the U.S.-Thailand MOU on customs cooperation.
Speak for yourself.
U.S.-Iran agreements are different. Every word is contested. Every comma is analyzed. The JCPOA was over 100 pages with annexes and technical specifications. So when a U.S.-Iran MOU is kept secret, it's not because it's routine. It's because both sides made a calculated decision that secrecy was the only way to get it done.
It's normal in form, but extraordinary in context. The mechanism is standard. The opacity is strategic.
There's another layer here that I think is underappreciated, the electronic signature. In diplomatic history, the form of signing has always carried meaning. The Treaty of Westphalia was signed with quill pens and wax seals over years of negotiation. The Camp David Accords had that famous three-way handshake on the White House lawn. The JCPOA had the foreign ministers lined up in Vienna.
This had a DocuSign link.
And that's not a trivial detail. An electronic signature can be disavowed more easily than a photographed handshake. It can be characterized as a technical-level agreement, not a leader-level commitment. It lowers the political stakes of the signing itself, while preserving whatever operational commitments are in the text.
The medium is part of the deniability architecture. It wasn't a summit. It was just a document exchange between ministries.
And that deniability extends to the content. If the text leaks and in this region, things leak, both sides can say that was a working draft, not the final version, or that's been superseded by subsequent discussions. The electronic, non-ceremonial nature of the signing keeps everything provisional in the public eye.
Let's talk about what might actually be in this thing. You mentioned freedom of navigation and the ceasefire. What else would be on the table in June 2026?
The context here is important. The Strait of Hormuz was closed or severely disrupted. There was a conflict. We know from the headlines that the U.S. and Iran were at war, or at least in active hostilities, and now there's a ceasefire being extended. An MOU in that context is probably covering several baskets of issues.
Give me the baskets.
First basket, cessation of hostilities terms, timelines for withdrawal, deconfliction mechanisms, maybe a hotline between military commands to prevent miscalculation. Second basket, economic. What sanctions get eased? What assets get unfrozen? What oil exports are permitted? Third basket, nuclear. This is always on the table with Iran. IAEA access, enrichment limits, maybe a return to some version of the JCPOA parameters. Fourth basket, regional proxies. Iran's support for Hezbollah, the Houthis, Shia militias in Iraq and Syria.
That fourth basket is the hardest one to verify even with a public text, let alone a secret one. How do you write an MOU clause about proxy forces that's enforceable?
You probably don't. What you write is something about non-interference or respect for sovereignty that both sides can interpret however they want. The real agreement on proxies wouldn't be in the text, it would be in the side deals, the quiet understandings, the back-channel assurances that never get written down at all.
The text is the tip of the iceberg, and the silence around the text is the waterline. We can see the tip and guess at what's below.
That's actually one of the objectives the silence serves. It allows the real deal to be bigger or smaller than what either side can publicly acknowledge. The Iranians can't publicly agree to limit support for Hezbollah. The Americans can't publicly agree to look the other way on certain enrichment activities. But both can happen in practice, and the secret MOU provides just enough of a framework to coordinate the unspoken parts.
There's a phrase I've heard you use before. The intelligence gap on Iran's nuclear program is not accidental. Does the opacity of this MOU connect to that same pattern?
Since 2021, IAEA access has been restricted. Cameras have been turned off. Inspectors have been limited. The result is that nobody outside Iran's nuclear program knows with certainty what the enrichment levels are, what the stockpile looks like, how close they are to weapons-grade material. That ambiguity is deliberate. It's a bargaining chip.
A secret MOU lets them maintain that ambiguity while potentially making commitments that narrow the uncertainty behind the scenes.
Iran could agree in the MOU to restore IAEA access or to cap enrichment at a certain level without having to announce it publicly and trigger a domestic backlash. The verification happens quietly through the IAEA's technical reports, which are circulated to member states but don't always make headlines.
The silence doesn't just serve political objectives. It serves technical, verification-related objectives. It creates space for compliance without the pressure of public scrutiny.
Which is counterintuitive, because we tend to think transparency produces compliance. And in many cases, it does. But in cases where public disclosure would empower spoilers, factions that want the agreement to fail, secrecy can actually be the more stabilizing choice.
The spoiler problem. Walk me through who the spoilers are here.
On the Iranian side, it's the IRGC and the hardline clerical factions. The IRGC benefits economically from sanctions. They run the smuggling networks, the black market, the front companies. Normalization threatens their business model. They also benefit politically from perpetual confrontation with America. It justifies their budget, their autonomy, their role as the defenders of the revolution.
A peace deal is an existential threat to the Revolutionary Guard's balance sheet.
To its political power. On the American side, the spoilers are different, but the dynamic is similar. You've got members of Congress who will oppose any agreement with Iran on principle. You've got Gulf allies, particularly Saudi Arabia and the UAE, who don't want to see Iran rehabilitated economically. And you've got the Israeli security establishment, which has been very clear that it views Iranian nuclear ambiguity as unacceptable and has its own red lines.
All of those spoilers are reading the silence right now and drawing their own conclusions.
That's the tightrope. The silence has to be thick enough to prevent spoilers from finding specific clauses to attack, but thin enough that the parties can demonstrate to their respective allies that they got something worthwhile. It's a Goldilocks problem. Too much secrecy and your allies panic because they assume the worst, too much transparency and your domestic opponents tear the agreement apart.
Has there been a historical case where this kind of secret MOU actually worked? Where the silence held and the agreement delivered?
The example that comes to mind is the US-China-Shanghai Communique of 1972. It wasn't technically an MOU, it was a communique, but it was deliberately ambiguous on the status of Taiwan. Both sides agreed to language that each could interpret in its own favor. The ambiguity allowed Nixon to go to China, open diplomatic relations, and the framework held for decades. The silence, or more precisely, the constructive ambiguity, was the foundation.
Where the secrecy blew up.
The Sykes-Picot Agreement during World War I. Britain and France secretly divided up the Ottoman Middle East. The text wasn't public, and when it leaked, through the Bolsheviks actually, who found it in the Russian archives and published it, it completely undermined everything the British had been telling the Arabs about independence and self-determination. The secrecy was exposed, and the betrayal poisoned the relationship for generations.
Secrecy works until it doesn't. And when it doesn't, the damage is worse than if you'd been transparent from the start.
Because the secrecy itself becomes the story. The content becomes secondary. The headline isn't U.S. and Iran agree on Strait of Hormuz terms. It's secret deal between U.S. and Iran exposed. And that framing makes whatever was agreed look sinister, even if it's perfectly reasonable.
Which brings us to the electronic signature detail Daniel mentioned. In a world where everything leaks eventually, signing electronically, no paper trail, no physical signatures, no notarized copies. Is that about security? Or is it about making the document easier to disavow if it does leak?
Digital documents can be secured in ways physical documents can't. Encryption, access controls, audit logs. But they can also be deleted in ways physical documents can't. A signed PDF on a secure server is both more secure and more deniable than a leather-bound folder with ink signatures.
The Schrödinger's document. It exists and doesn't exist simultaneously, depending on who's asking.
That's genuinely useful in diplomacy. The British Foreign Office used to have a practice of non-papers. Documents that were shared between parties but weren't attributed, weren't signed, weren't officially acknowledged. They allowed real negotiation to happen without creating a record that could be weaponized later. The electronic MOU is the 21st century version. It's real enough to coordinate action, but ephemeral enough to disavow.
I want to circle back to something you said earlier about the IAEA. You mentioned that the intelligence gap on Iran's nuclear program is not accidental. If this MOU includes nuclear provisions, how does the IAEA verify them without a public mandate?
This is where it gets technically interesting. The IAEA doesn't need a public MOU to do verification. Iran is a signatory to the Non-Proliferation Treaty. The IAEA has a safeguards agreement with Iran that exists independently of any political MOU. What the MOU could do is expand IAEA access beyond what the safeguards agreement requires, what's called the additional protocol.
Which Iran has signed but not ratified, if I remember right.
Iran signed the additional protocol in 2003, implemented it voluntarily for a while, stopped, started again under the JCPOA, and then stopped again. It's been off again, on again. A secret MOU could include a commitment to resume provisional implementation of the additional protocol without Iran having to go through the domestic political fight of ratification.
The IAEA inspectors show up, get broader access, and nobody in Tehran has to vote on it.
The IAEA reports to its Board of Governors, which includes the US and European states. The information flows, but it flows through technical channels, not public press conferences. The verification happens, but the political cost of the concession is minimized.
That's clever. The opacity isn't just about hiding concessions from adversaries. It's about hiding them from your own political system.
That's a feature of diplomacy that I think is underappreciated. Sometimes the only way to make a concession is to make it quietly. Public concessions get punished. Quiet concessions get implemented. The peace process moves forward not through grand public gestures, but through 1,000 small, deniable accommodations.
Which is deeply unsatisfying if you're a citizen who wants to know what your government is doing in your name.
And that's the democratic tension at the heart of this. The U.S. is a democracy. At least, it's supposed to be, and secret agreements with foreign powers sit uneasily with democratic accountability. But the alternative, full public transparency during ongoing, fragile negotiations, often means no agreement at all.
Because the negotiation becomes a performance for domestic audiences rather than an actual attempt to find common ground.
You see this in trade negotiations all the time. The U.S. Trade Representative negotiates in secret, Congress gets to vote on the final deal, but the negotiating texts are not public during the process. The rationale is the same. If every draft is public, every interest group mobilizes against every clause, and the whole thing collapses under the weight of 1,000 veto points.
The silence serves a fourth objective we haven't named yet. Beyond protecting against domestic spoilers, beyond strategic ambiguity toward regional rivals, beyond enabling quiet concessions, it also protects the negotiation process itself from being crushed by public pressure before it can produce results.
That might be the most important objective of all. The U.S.-Iran relationship is so poisoned, so freighted with decades of mistrust, that any public negotiation would be swarmed by protesters on one side and hardliners on the other before the first coffee break. The silence creates a bubble in which actual diplomacy can happen.
A diplomatic clean room.
That's exactly the image. You need a controlled environment where contaminants, in this case, political pressure, media scrutiny, activist mobilization, are kept out so that the delicate work can proceed.
Let me ask the uncomfortable question then. What's the argument against this? Because I'm sure there are people, serious people, not just partisans, who think secret MOUs with Iran are a terrible idea.
The argument is straightforward. Opacity enables bad deals. If nobody can see the text, nobody can evaluate whether what was given up was worth what was gained. The administration can claim victory while making disastrous concessions. And because there's no public scrutiny, there's no accountability. If the deal falls apart, nobody knows who to blame or what went wrong.
There's a historical echo there. The JCPOA was public, exhaustively public, and its critics still argued that the side deals between Iran and the IAEA, which were not fully public, contained secret exemptions, whether or not that was true. The perception of secrecy undermined the agreement's legitimacy.
The perception problem is real. Even if the secret MOU is perfectly reasonable, the fact of its secrecy creates a legitimacy deficit. Opponents will fill the void with their worst assumptions. And if anything goes wrong, if Iran violates the spirit of the agreement, if the strait closes again, the secrecy will be cited as evidence of bad faith from the start.
The same opacity that enables the deal also undermines its durability.
That's the paradox. Secrecy gets you to the table and across the finish line, but it weakens the agreement's resilience against future shocks. A public agreement has constituencies that will defend it. The business interests that invested based on it, the diplomats who staked their reputations on it, the allies who were consulted. A secret agreement has none of that. It's held up by nothing but the continued alignment of interests that produced it.
When those interests diverge, as they inevitably will, there's nothing to stop the whole thing from unraveling overnight.
A single tweak could blow it up.
That's the world we live in.
And that's why the electronic signature detail matters in a second way. An electronic document can be unsigned as easily as it was signed. There's no ceremonial weight holding it together. If the political winds shift, both sides can simply pretend it never existed.
Where does this leave us? We've got a secret MOU that may or may not contain significant commitments, signed electronically, serving multiple strategic objectives for both sides, but structurally fragile. What should we be watching for to understand whether it's actually working?
1. The Strait of Hormuz. Are tankers moving? Are insurance premiums dropping? That's the most visible, most verifiable indicator. 2. IAEA reports. The next quarterly report from the IAEA Director General will tell us whether access has changed, whether enrichment levels have shifted, whether there's been any movement on the nuclear file, even if nobody announces it publicly. 3. The proxy front. Are Houthi attacks in the Red Sea declining? Is there a reduction in rocket fire from southern Lebanon? Are Shia militias in Iraq standing down? These are the real metrics of whether Iran is implementing any commitments it may have made. The proxies are the most important indicator and the hardest one to attribute to any specific agreement.
Because Iran can always say, we don't control these groups. They're independent actors making their own decisions.
Which is why the silence around the MOU is so convenient. If the proxies go quiet, Iran can claim credit quietly. If they don't, Iran can deny responsibility loudly. The opacity covers both scenarios.
The silence isn't just about hiding what was agreed. It's about preserving optionality for what happens next.
Diplomacy is fundamentally about preserving optionality. Every commitment you make closes off some future path. The art is in closing off the paths you don't want while keeping open the ones you might need. Secrecy is a tool for keeping options open.
That's the answer to Daniel's question about what objectives the silence serves. It's not one thing. It's a Swiss Army knife of diplomatic functions. Domestic political cover, strategic ambiguity toward rivals, protection of the negotiation process, deniability for concessions, and optionality for future moves. All of that is packed into the simple fact that nobody will release the PDF.
It's worth saying, this is not a new invention. Secret diplomacy is as old as diplomacy itself. The Congress of Vienna in 1815 had secret articles, the Sykes-Picot Agreement we mentioned. The secret protocols of the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact. History is full of agreements whose contents were hidden from the publics whose lives they affected.
The difference now is that secrets are harder to keep. The electronic signature creates a digital trail. Somebody somewhere has the file. And in an era of leaks and hacks and whistleblowers, the shelf life of a secret diplomatic text is measured in months, not decades.
Which is probably factored into the calculation. Both sides know this might leak. The MOU might be designed with that expectation. Nothing in it that would be catastrophic if exposed, just things that would be politically inconvenient. The secrecy isn't absolute, it's just enough to get through the initial implementation phase without being blown up.
A temporary bubble, not a permanent vault.
And that's actually a more realistic way to think about diplomatic secrecy in the 21st century. It's not about hiding things forever. It's about controlling the timing of disclosure, buying enough time for the agreement to produce some results before the scrutiny begins.
If I'm a listener trying to make sense of the headlines, US and Iran sign secret MOU, nobody knows what's in it. The takeaway is, this is simultaneously normal and extraordinary. The mechanism is standard diplomatic practice. The opacity serves real strategic purposes. But the stakes are enormous, the durability is questionable, and the proof will be in the shipping lanes, the IAEA reports, and the behavior of proxies across the region.
Watch what doesn't happen. The absence of attacks, the absence of incidents, the absence of escalation. That's the signature of a working agreement, even if you never see the signature itself.
The dog that didn't bark, as they say.
In diplomacy, silence is not just a tactic, it's often the product.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the early 1500s, the Itelman people of the Kamchatka Peninsula discovered that a particular black lichen, when boiled with reindeer fat, produced a paste that could seal wounds and prevent infection for weeks, an interspecies collaboration between fungus and algae that wound up saving human lives on the other side of a symbiotic bargain.
A lichen-based wound sealant from 16th century Kamchatka. Not where I thought this was going.
I have so many questions about how they discovered that, but I suspect I don't want the answers. The one thing I keep coming back to here is how much of international relations runs on unwritten rules and unread documents. We spend so much time analyzing what's public, the treaties, the UN resolutions, the press conferences, but the real machinery often operates in the gaps between public statements. This MOU is a perfect case study in that gap.
The gap itself is the message. We're not telling you what we agreed to. It's a statement about the relationship, about the domestic constraints, about the regional dynamics. The content matters, but the form, secret, electronic, non-ceremonial, might matter more in the long run.
Which is a good place to leave it. The text will either leak or it won't. The strait will either stay open or it won't. But the strategic logic of the silence is legible right now, whether you're in Washington, Tehran, Jerusalem, or Riyadh.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, and thanks to everyone listening. This has been My Weird Prompts. You can find every episode at myweirdprompts.com. Until next time.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.